There we go. We're running. Well, hello. This series of five discussions is designed to help pastors, church leaders, and ministry volunteers learn how they can train, screen, protect, report, and care. At the BCMD, we're committed to helping every church become a place of safety for children, youth, and vulnerable adults. More about the Pathways Initiative can be found at our website, that you can find at bcmd.org/pathways. So I'm Keith Meyer. I'm a pastor and associational missionary for the Eastern Baptist Association, and I've been blessed to be the head of the Sexual Abuse Task Force here in BCMD.
And I'm Chris Buckman. I'm the Youth and Kids Missionary for the Baptist State Convention of Maryland, Delaware, and a member of the task force as well.
So, Chris, today we're talking about the first of the five words that we've laid out as part of creating safe and protective churches. Today we're talking about training, by which we mean sexual abuse awareness training.
Yeah, you know, Keith, I led children's ministry for over 15 years in a very small church in a suburban area. And I just didn't know what I didn't know. It all changed. I took an hour and a half long sexual abuse awareness training, and it completely opened my eyes to the fact that we really weren't protecting kids like we thought we were protecting kids. I learned things about different types of sexual offenders that target churches specifically. I wasn't aware of the different types of grooming patterns that and habits and characteristics of those offenders that target churches. And I wasn't aware that a huge portion of sexual abuse to kids is done by other children, not adults. So our screening measures that we kind of had in place weren't really helping with that. So, and I had also thought that I had just kind of been lucky that we never had any incidents at our church. But then I also learned in this training that there's a large number of people who don't disclose abuse until they're adults, if they ever disclose it. And so I thought, man, you know, there's a very high likely possibility that something could have happened in my church. I just didn't know about it. Mm. So the abuse training really just opened my eyes and really changed the way that we did ministry at our church once I implemented that.
Wow. What did it feel like to learn that?
At first it was shock. And then I think it was humbling because I had done ministry for so long. I thought we were doing things the right way. Then I kind of got a little scared thinking, oh my gosh, what if something did happen? And then it was kind of frantic to make changes and get changes implemented quickly. So, you know, we could get this taken care of right away before we let any more ministry in the way that we were doing it.
Yeah. In my discussions with some pastors and ministry leaders, I've found that, that there's a feeling of, what we have is good enough, or, you know, a feeling of if we start to pick at this and make changes and we don't do them adequately, that we could cause trouble. And there really is this kind of counterintuitive protective sense sometimes, like I don't want to go too far in these efforts if because of ways in which I might offend my volunteers, or ways in which I might lead my church to greater risk or create problems. And it really I think that you feeling those feelings and then pushing ahead and working on this is a it's something that a lot of us just need to overcome, our fear of the unknown. So training is an important part of protecting the vulnerable. Then we believe, based on these five words that we've laid out, that sexual abuse awareness training is a foundational component of onboarding new staff and volunteers who are going to have access to children and youth and vulnerable adults. Can you tell us more about why training is so important?
Yeah, I think the first reason is that it reinforces a culture of zero tolerance for abuse. And that's really the stance that any church or any youth serving organization needs to take. The more trained eyes that you have, the safer kids will be. So if every staff member and volunteer is educated to know what the symptoms of abuse look like in a child, or signs that tell us something isn't right, or notice when somebody, another staff member or volunteer, might be pushing boundaries in an unhealthy way with a child, it empowers us to take steps to move into action to protect the child. So knowing to look out, knowing what red flags to look out for, what grooming patterns look like, it allows everyone to just kind of be on the same page and to have more eyes and ears available. If I, as the ministry leader, am the only one who's trained in sexual abuse awareness, that's only two eyes. But if every single person who has access to kids and works with them has that training to know what to look out for, even if it's abuse that's not occurring in our church, we need to be a safe place for kids. If something's happening at home, we need to be able to have some educational knowledge on what to look for. So once they're all trained and know exactly what to look for, know what to do when they see those signs, who to call, what to say, it just ensures that we do ministry much safer. And so it can save kids from a lifetime of trauma.
You know, when we talk about the impact of abuse, many times I think that church leaders, pastors, trustees, and other kinds of board members, they think about the fallout or the effect if something were to go wrong in their church, how it would affect their church, how it would affect attendance, how it would affect the reputation of the church in the community. But what's often overlooked, I think, is the impact of abuse on the individual, which you just said, a lifetime of trauma, darkness to light, an organization that we have found helpful and we've used their resources before. They say that the economic impact of of abuse on the average victim, this is just the average, is over $200,000 over their lifetime, in terms of medical costs, counseling, just difficulty and struggle. The impact can last their entire lifetime. Also, there's all kinds of coping or reactionary effects that come, the social impact, right? Where trouble in school, trouble in terms of relationships, whether it's with their parents or boyfriend girlfriend kind of thing. There's also many ways in which children act out of anger, so some kinds of social delinquency, and then finally there's their individual health impact, which is the emotional and mental impact and strain. Often substance abuse problems are very common, and then there are all kinds of just different kinds of health struggles that survivors encounter. And so yeah, if a training can create zero tolerance for abuse and raise awareness, it can spare someone these long-term difficult impacts.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with saying we want to protect our churches and our institutions. That's a given. That's a natural tendency. But if we flip that script, and we put the child first, knowing all the things that we know, again, the awareness training is going to give you all of these things, and this is what can happen, a lifetime of trauma. If we inevitably work to protect that child, by default, we're going to protect our church. And so I think when we turn that around and we get our focus right, because we are acting in the image of Christ and protecting children and people and vulnerable adults, when we flip that, and inevitably as a secondary measure, we'll be protecting our institution as well. But that training, if we can get in there and just get that awareness training, and sometimes the training alone can deter predators, which is the second reason I recommend sexual abuse awareness training, just having that requirement alone is enough to deter someone who may come to your church that wants to do harm. When you implement a policy that each staff member and volunteer participate in sexual abuse awareness training, it speaks volumes to someone who may want to target your church to gain access to children or youth, vulnerable people. When predatory offenders learn that every staff member and volunteer knows the grooming habits of offenders and what to look for, that's enough for them to say they're going to go somewhere else to another church who maybe doesn't do that. And so it gives real education to our staff and empowers them, I think. And so those people that are looking to do harm will more likely remove themselves from the candidacy of volunteering at your church if they know that all of your staff are trained in that. So it's a clear signal to everyone at your church that you take the safety of children, vulnerable adults, youth very seriously. And so just having the requirement alone can be enough to deter a predator.
Chris, you say that training teaches people and makes them aware of grooming behaviors. Grooming, I've heard defined before as manipulative behaviors that the abuser uses to gain access to a potential victim, to coerce them to agree to the abuse, and to reduce the risk of being caught. I've also heard you talk about grooming the adults or grooming the congregation. Could you talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, a good sexual abuse awareness training will include the grooming patterns. And a good training will talk about the fact that these offenders will oftentimes groom the people who have access to the kids or the youth or the vulnerable adults, whoever they're wanting to target. So they'll groom the people who have access to those people first. So someone may come in, go through your screening process, appear to come off as very helpful, very trustworthy. They spend the time building some relationships with people in the congregation, really building up a reputation so that we trust them. So once they get in there and they start grooming a child, and that child makes an accusation against that person, us as adults who've been groomed would say, "Oh no, not Mr. So-and-so, not Miss So-and-so. She would never do that." So that's kind of we need to be aware that not just so naive. And I'm not saying that we need to second guess everyone that walks through our church doors that wants to serve, that they are, grooming us if they're come across as helpful and trustworthy. But we just need to have that training in the back of our mind to know that that is a tactic that they use. So again, that training is just big to let people, church volunteers and staff know that.
Yeah, that's good. And we talk a bit more, and we will talk more about how important protection policies are, that training is important, that screening is important, but that what's key in terms of creating this protective environment is a set of policies that that ensure that everybody knows how to behave and what is what's off limits, what behavior is acceptable. And when people push up against those boundaries, what their response should be. So we've talked about the fact that that training creates a and reinforces an environment of zero tolerance. The requirement can to have training can deter predators. What's your third reason for
Well,
having training?
just as you talked about the policies and procedures, having that training really ensures that your policies and procedures get followed. What I've found from my own experience is when people are trained to know in sexual abuse awareness training to know what to look for, they really take your policies seriously because they know they've been trained to know that this happens and how it happens. And so because what they learn in training, we can also craft policies and procedures that will deflect certain habits that offenders have. For example, one method in the grooming process is gift giving to children. They'll select a child and then they'll start to give gifts. So if we know that, we learn that in training. So we set up a policy in our ministry that says no one is allowed to give individual gifts to a child that aren't approved, or unless you have one for everyone. And so when we see somebody push that boundary, that can be a red flag to us. And if we have a consequence that says if you break our policies, then you're out, then we can craft policies that hopefully will stop abuse before it actually starts, so we can stop it in the grooming process. So I just found that when our church, I know from personal experience, when our church went through that, the training, we just run ministry 100 times more safely. I have found our staff and volunteers questioning policies. Well, don't you think it should be this? Don't you think this might be more safer? I found them questioning when someone might be breaking it or when we're not following. Well, the policy says this, we should really stick to the policy. So I just find that they are, we're seeing more compliance with our policies. We're seeing them double think scenarios that we have. And we're also holding each other accountable to the policies and procedures, which keep everyone safe, the kids, and the staff and volunteers. So, I think it's important to have that training before you introduce the policies and procedures, because then it won't just be something they read over and look through and kind of toss to the side. They understand why your bathroom policy is the way it is, and then they're going to follow it because they're knowing they're protecting themselves and they're protecting kids.
It's a lot easier, I think, for people to hold one another accountable when they have an established set of policies that govern all kinds of behaviors, instead of just saying, hey, and watch out for bad things, right? Because people then default to, well, I don't know. Is this something that I speak to them about? Is this something that I speak to leadership about? The absence of training and the absence of policies is what creates confusion and doubt. And so there's an important component to having this training and having it so that it can educate and give confidence to folks. Do you think that you mentioned that you think that training has made a significant difference in your church and other churches that you've administered training to?
I definitely think so. It just ensures us, I just feel like we run a much safer ministry. I know that everyone who is in a room with our kids, our students, that they just are doing things much safer. We're as we implement new ministries, we start to think about before we jump into a new ministry, like how can we keep kids safe from the get-go, knowing these things that we know. So I just noticed volunteers really considering the safety of kids and students in all of our activities. I noticed them kind of circling the playgrounds when the kids are outside because they know now about peer-to-peer abuse and how and when that can happen. And so rather than letting kids go out on the playground and everybody, all the staff and volunteers pulling out their cell phones and chatting with one another, they'll kind of just circle the playground. They can still chat with each other, but they're just knowing to be aware, more aware of what to look for, not to just let kids run loose together, especially if we have kids on the playground that are varying ages, because they know about, that peer-to-peer abuse and how and when it happens. So I've heard them verbally sharing policies with our parents, which makes parents feel much more secure about your ministry, and saying, well, this is why we do this. So it's just a real win to know that not only can your staff follow the policy, but they've bought into it so much that they can recite it and share it with parents. So I think I attribute all of those things to the requirement for sexual abuse awareness training. And so I'm pretty sure if you ask any staff member that's been through the training, when we implemented at our church, every staff member, when it was over, came up to me and said, I had no idea. Thank you so much for giving us the training. It's helpful just as a parent to know some of that stuff. So it's just a benefit for all. And I think it's foundational. And that's where we start. And that's why it's one of our first words in our 5-step process.
That's really good. I just want to review your 3 points here, that that training reinforces a culture of zero tolerance for abuse. The more awareness there is of this plague, this horrible problem, both inside and outside of churches, the greater the level of awareness, the greater the greater a level of or the greater a commitment to zero tolerance. Secondly, the requirement alone can deter predators. People will find that that a well-trained church is a risky environment for them. And then third, it ensures that well-written policies and procedures are followed. I really appreciate what you said earlier on, Chris, about how instinctively we think about protecting the church. We think about protecting ministries. We think about protecting maybe even it sounds noble to say we want to do this to protect the reputation of Jesus. But when we prioritize protecting children, vulnerable adults, when we do that, all those things naturally fall in line. And so training is a critical component of that. I want to encourage anybody watching, if you've not visited our resource page at bcmd.org/pathways, you can learn more about train, screen, protect, care, and report, which are our five emphasis components for our pathways protection program. And I just want to make anybody who's watching or listening aware that the BCMD is here to help with any and all of these screening measures, any of the protective elements. We don't want people to feel overwhelmed, that they often do. Instead, we want people to feel educated, empowered, and equipped to properly screen staff and volunteers, as well as implement all the other components of a protection plan. So we'll be back next time to talk about skillful screening. And I think you're going to have six practices for us that we're going to dig into next time. Until then, I'm Keith Meyer, and this has been me and Chris Buckman. We want to thank everybody for listening.
Thank you.